The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers followed by our information break, and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Jeff.
Hi, my name is Jeff, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you guys for letting me share my story, my experience, strength, and hope with you today. My sobriety date is May 11th, 2013. My home group is the Atlantic Group. My sponsor is Alan L. He is a sponsor in this group. His name is Ron B. And I think you may know who both of them are. So anyway, going to kind of go through where I started out. First time I had a drink, I was about 7 or 8 years old. And right away, I was mesmerized with alcohol. I had my first full drink by the time I was 11. My parents were both advertising people, so my dad worked on the Seagram's account. And I remember we had this big, gorgeous bar, and it looked like something out of Mad Men, you know, like the Dom Draper bar, and I would just be mesmerized by it every time it opened up and just look at it and be like, ah, you know, like a church. And, you know, like by the time I was around 16, 17 years old was where things started to speed up and spin out of control. I started going out on the weekends, you know, got the fake ID and started hitting bars or finding bars. I grew up in New York City and, you know, had friends who made fake IDs, and we ended up just managing to find bars which would serve us. And, you know, my first experiences were from that, and then went to college, and that's when things really picked up the pace and got completely out of control. By the time I was like 18, 19 years old, I mean, I was drinking like 4 or 5 nights a week, getting obliterated out of my mind, and just, it progressed and progressed and progressed. And once, you know, I remember my 21st birthday was the night before 9/11, and to give you an understanding, I started off that night doing 13 shots of the Three Wise Men. For those who don't know what that is, that's when you mix Jim, Johnny, and Jack. And we mixed in a pitcher, and I had a lot of fun drinking it. And, you know, then started doing liquid cocaine shots, which turned to doing cocaine off of a stripper's tits. And, you know, so want to combine liquid form and real form. And then woke up the next morning hungover, driving home on I-95. I went to school in Florida and was hungover out of my mind on 3 hours sleep and heard that the World Trade Center got blown up. And, you know, this was kind of, you know, not to get into that, but this was kind of the way I drank. I just went off the rails every time. And I was a blackout drinker and had no clue that I had a drinking problem. You know, I just thought, okay, every night I found a new reason to drink. It's Tuesday night, it's college night here, it's Wednesday night, it's dollar pitcher night, it's Thursday night, it's some other college night, you know, it's Friday night, it's Friday night, Saturday night, Saturday night, Sunday fun day, you know, Monday night football, which turned into Monday I'm bored, and just go out and get bombed. And then when I got out of college, I remember, you know, like, I just remember getting out of college and be like, oh, when I find a job, you know, I'll be all right. I'll slow down. I won't go out as much. I'll go out on the weekends. Total garbage. Absolute garbage. What I would do is I would compile my drinking into 2 days. So basically, instead of drinking, you know, like 10 drinks a night, I'd be drinking like, I don't know, 25, 30 drinks Friday night, Saturday night. And just coming home, getting obliterated. For years and years, my parents told me, slow down. I had friends telling me to slow down. I had people in AA tell me to slow down. I mean, this is the kind of drinker I was. I was completely out of my mind and off the rails and never saw an issue with it. You know, I mean, I was the guy who disrupted weddings over and over again. I've had to make so many amends that I'm involved with. I am so sorry I screwed up your wedding. I am so sorry I got in a fight with my girlfriend in the middle of your wedding. I am so sorry I almost dropped your grandmother at your wedding walking her down the aisle because I was an usher. That really did happen. I thank my friend Joe that he was on the other side of me and this 80-year-old woman didn't collapse. Because I took like 18 shots of whiskey before I walked her down the aisle and proceeded to get blackout drunk. And of course it was one of these weddings where it's my oldest friend and our parents are friends. And my dad comes up to me and he pulls me aside. He's like, "You're trashed, aren't you? Thank you." And, you know, this just progressed and progressed for years and years. Finally, about like the last 2 years that I, before I got sober, I was in an alcoholic relationship. And, you know, I kept trying to get her to slow down. I was trying to slow down. By the way, how do you know you have an alcohol problem? When you continuously try to slow down and you continuously take online tests asking yourself, am I really an alcoholic? So here I am, I'm in this alcoholic relationship. I'm telling her to slow down. I'm checking her into rehab. Meanwhile, I'm just getting trashed out of my mind behind her back. Going to bachelor parties, you know, in AC and just drinking, drinking, drinking. Calling her trashed. I mean, like, all kinds of things. And then things started to get really dark. I lost my job. We were still together. She got sober for a couple months. We had a pregnancy. We had an abortion. Completely blew up our relationship. And she went out of the, you know, she just went off and we were just enabling one another. And then finally, things spun out of control. We broke up. And, you know, the last 6-7 months were just dark. I got into this really dark place. I was drinking every day. I was going into work. I didn't care what happened. I really didn't. I would dream about alcohol. I would crave alcohol. I'd be sitting in my apartment thinking to myself, what can I get my hands on? Finally, about 5 weeks before I got sober, one of my close friends who's in the program had a Final Four party. It was the NCAA championship. And I ended up, well, put it this way, I've made amends to these two women I'm friends with. We'll leave it at that. And I was told, you know, the following Monday that by my friend, he said to me, look, I love you, but you got to slow down, man. This is one of my best friends. He's been sober for 9 years. And, you know, 5 weeks later, what got me here was, it was May 10th, 2013. I walked into a bar. I was trashed out of my mind with a couple of friends. And started doing shots with a bunch of guys I didn't know. Jameson was my favorite, and I used to slug, you know, 10, 12 of those bad boys on top of whatever else I was doing. I was probably like 8 double Jack and Cokes, 6-7 beers, and then started slugging shots. And I got in an argument with somebody. He kept making a bunch of racist comments. A couple of my friends are black who I was with, and he kept saying the N-word, and one thing led to another, and he said to me, what are you going to do about it? And he shoved me. So I punched his face in. There I was. I knocked somebody out who I didn't even know. And by the grace of God, it was like a sign. The bouncer said to me, you have about 20 seconds to get the out of here. Otherwise, you're going to get arrested. And oh, by the way, I was about to buy an 8-ball right before this happened. So I'm looking at, you know, 5, 7, 8 years of jail. I was like, and my friend goes, we're getting the F out of here, and pulled me out the bar. I got home that night and woke up about 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. And finally, you know, like, I woke up, I was trashed still. Thank you. And I vomited all over myself, vomited all over my bed. Went to go get the sheets off, vomited all over the floor, slipped in my own puke, fell, smacked my elbow, smacked my back. Went back to sleep for a few hours, called my friend who told me I needed help, and I said, you got me. We went to straight 12 that day. I've been sober ever since. And, you know, I just want to say I've gone through the steps. I live in 9, 10, and 11 every day. I thank God. I am so thankful that I'm here in this program, because I'd be in jail. There's no question I'd be in jail, or I'd kill myself, because I used to drive home on 25, 30 drinks deep when I was in school. And, you know, I pray every morning. I pray every night before I go to bed. I'm constantly working on my amends. I'm constantly working on inventory. And, you know, I just wanted to thank you guys for letting me share my story with you today. And, again, hopefully I help somebody in these rooms. Take care.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Marion.
I'm Marion. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Oh my God, it is so great to be here tonight. I'm just thrilled. I want to thank the group for inviting us and for your warm welcome and all these amazing people that I've learned first names as Peter and I have traveled together. And I my sobriety date is November 11th, 1989. My home group is Primary Purpose Big Book Study in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, if y'all want to come down some night time on a Monday night. My sponsor's Polly P., and she does what Peter does, like, all the time, too. So it's we went to a little meeting last night. We were like, oh, we're in the big city in New York. We're going to go hit an AA meeting. And we got in this basement, and there was four other people there. And we had a little contempt prior to investigation, but I know it ended up being beautiful because it was one drunk talking to the next, and it was incredible. And, you know, I came to Florida with Peter via Bellingham, Washington. Anybody ever heard of that? Yeah, right on. It's a little town north of Seattle, Washington, and at one time it was in the Guinness Book of World Records for having more hippies per capita. So, you know, I don't know if it's still in that Guinness Book of World Records for that. So you can imagine this was the way I grew up, okay? And I always tell Peter this, it's crazy, but you know, where we live in Florida, there's a lot of you New Yorkers and stuff down there, and when we get to a stoplight, you know, somebody's blowing their horn at us down there, just like that happens a lot up here. And I'm like, yeah, in my hometown of Bellingham, you know, the only time somebody honks a horn like that is when they say, hey, there's Kathy, hi, you know. So I'm not used to that kind of thing, you know, but I'm telling you, I'm just having the time of my life. The last few days we got to go do a conference Peter did with his sponsor, and for a girl like me from where I come from, I feel like, you know, like I'm an AA Cinderella. I'm an AA Cinderella. I seriously am. And where I get to be in the shoes that I fill today, I mean, they're pretty high, but, and I'm really short. The life I live today and where God has rocketed me into the dimension of living where I live today, this loving God that separated me from alcohol November 11th, 1989, I can tell you that it's nothing short of a miracle. And if you're new to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, we welcome you with open arms. And I hope you find that sense of belonging, that sense of that ability to have others love you till you could love yourself. And if you're an alcoholic and you came into these rooms like I did, you understand what that means. Because when I came into the rooms, I had no love for myself. I was raised in this family of raging alcoholics, and there were six kids. There was three girls, and there was three boys, and I was the middle girl. We were the dysfunctional Brady Bunch, and I was Jan. I was Jan, and I wanted to be Marcia, you know? Just like, we always talk about that, seriously. And, you know, and I was a caretaker. I was a peacekeeper. I had my role down in that family, and we'd be upstairs. I had brothers, you know? Mom and Dad were throwing whiskey around downstairs, and they'd send me down to break up the fights. And I learned how to play God early on in my life, real early on, that I can stop the violence. I know what to do to make Dad smile. I know what to do to make Mom happy. And I played that role. You know, I go to school. There was a lot of neglect. We weren't fed. We, you know, the lights were always turned off, you know, and my dad would work away in the summer. And, oh, God, it was like so, it was scary, and it was lonely, and my mom was in the booze, you know. And And we had dirty faces and all that stuff, you know. And I remember going to school, you know, I go to school in first grade and it was pitcher day and the teacher would comb my hair and she'd wash my face and, you know, and get me shined up to go there. So, you know, I always say this, like I was raised in shame. I was ashamed. I was wrong. I knew I wasn't okay, you know, and through that, I'm 19 years old. I'm at a party. My drinking career started at 15 at a high school dance. And I stole a bottle of MD 2020. Remember those? You know, the flat bottles that you can stick inside your coat. And I'm at a dance and I took a drink and that first drink, I threw it up in the toilet. And the second drink down, it was the answer. And I ran that and I chased that. And, you know, I'm an alcoholic from the get. I was there for the effect. I wanted that stuff in my body because I could be something different than who I was. And it was magic. And I've heard people say this in the rooms too. You know, it was like alcohol worked. Alcohol worked for me until I got to the rooms. I could be anybody different. I could be anybody different. And at 19 years old, I'm out there and I'm partying and I look across the room and there's this really good looking guy and he's raging and he's getting in a fight and he doesn't have a shirt on and he's got his little corduroys on and I'm like, it was love at first sight, girls. You know what I'm talking about? Love at first sight. And what I did in that moment, I knew that I met my dad. I can look back on that now today, and I can look back, and I had met my dad, you know, and I was going to fix that man. I was going to fix him. I was going to get him happy, and everything was going to be okay, you know. And I chased that. I chased that, and I was the housewife. I started, you know, all the way, I started work. We started having babies right away. You know, I had baby one, baby two, baby three, right in a row, and I was going to be the mom that my mom wasn't. But what I was doing, I was drinking the bottle. I was buying the stuff. I had the cars in the driveway and the house. And, you know, and what I learned through working the steps and working my program and working close with the sponsors, I found out that some hard stuff I had to swallow that I loved and I cherished and I abused and I neglected my children. And I had to take that, you know, because I knew I loved and I cherished them. But when I could get honest with myself that I abuse and I neglect them because I didn't, you know, they had to get their cereal in the morning and they had to get themselves off to school because mom was too drunk on the couch. And, you know, my disease progressed and there was other things that went with that we don't talk about in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, but anything I could put in my body to feel different, you know. And come 1986, I get pregnant again. I had these three little stair-step kids. And I get pregnant again when my youngest was 4 years old. I get pregnant again, and I'm thinking, oh, great, we're going to have this other baby. We had all those ones quick together. And Brian Daniel Bogards, ooh, there's a last name. There goes his anonymity, but he's in heaven. January 22nd of 1988, I had gone back to work, and I had this little three-month-old baby, and my little sister was babysitting him. And I came back to the house to pick him up. And when I picked him up, he was purple, and he had died of a crib death at my sister's house. And I love these rooms, and I love that I've been around here a long time, because every time I get to mention his name, he's part of how I hit my bottom. So he died a crib death, and we still don't know today what causes that stuff. You know, we still don't know. There's no answers for that. But that's January of 1987. And towards the end of that year, in August, my mom passed away. She died of lung cancer. And I was like, I was crazy. I was crazy, you guys. I was just nuts. And I didn't know it was the booze. I just thought I was crazy. So I went myself to go see a shrink. And I got in there to see that shrink. And when I got there, she told me, Marion, when you lose a child, you lose your future. And when you lose your parent, you lose your past. And honey, you're having trouble living in today. And I look at that, and I look at the story of Bill's story and the ominous warning, and I always state it wrong when it would, I'm not going to try. I butcher it every single time. I'm not going to try. But that was an ominous warning to me because I was having trouble living in today. And what happened on the morning of November 11th, 1989 was one more time I had told my husband, I'm going to fix this. I'm going to get better. I'm going to do this. And then that morning of November 11th, 1989, see, my family, I come from a family of those six, the weird Brady Bunch people. 5 out of 6 of us are sober, and 5 out of 6 of us have long-term sobriety. We have our funky times and that, but we haven't drank, you know, the weird family dysfunction, you know. But I've been, that day, my brother woke up under the bridge, and he told me, one of these days you're going to take a long, hard look in the mirror. And I did that day on November 11th. And I've got about 30 seconds to wrap this up. And what I can say to you is, hold on to God. Hold on to this fellowship. Get with the women if you're a woman. Get with the guys if you're the guy. Get yourself a home group that you consider the best one in the world. Pour some coffee, pick up some cigarette butts, and don't let anybody know you're doing it. Clean a toilet. Put some toilet paper in there, whatever. Anyway, it's a blessing and it's an honor to be in this great, the greatest city in the world, I think. It's amazing. And, thank you for having someone like me. Thank you.
Our main speaker tonight is Peter.
Thank you. My name is Peter. I'm a recovered alcoholic. And first things first, thank the group for having me. And to get up here to share my experience, strength, and hope with all of you. Thanks for having Marion up here, and thank you for our first speaker for a great talk. It's a treat for me to be up here to talk about what this power call God has done for me, what Alcoholics Anonymous continues to give me, and what Alcoholics Anonymous continues to remove from me. Loving God separated me from alcohol on June 23rd, 1988. I'm a recovered alcoholic. And I say recovered because I am, and anything less than that great fact would be falsely humble. A loving God separated me not too far from here, Lower East Side of Manhattan, on the day of June 23rd, 1988, from alcohol for the last time. My plan that day was not to stop drinking. I came to on another day of terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair, looking to go hustle up money to drink, and something happened that was divinely inspired that changed my life forever. Because on my best day, I couldn't stop drinking for good and all, as God has brought me to now. On my best day, I tried to control and regulate drinking, not to get into trouble and avoid some consequences. But June 23rd, 1988, I reached that jumping off place. And what I have found out, that God will take every one of us, drunk or sober, in Alcoholics Anonymous, to the edge of a cliff when we become willing, when we're willing again to go to any lengths, when we're given a mustard seed of willingness to go to any lengths, where that place of readiness to do anything is given to us. And when that happens, as it did for me in June of 88, the truth found me. Very often we look to go find the truth. The truth will find you. The truth will find us on a blind drunk, and the truth will find us in Alcoholics Anonymous when we're untreated going to meetings. So that wasn't the plan for me to get sober that day, but the truth found me, and it came in a place of the gift of desperation. I had had enough. And I had this realization that perhaps one more drink and I'm going to die. And it was the first time in my life I didn't want that. And I've been rocketed, catapulted with you tonight over the last 26 years in the sacred fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you haven't found out that AA is sacred, I pray that you stick around long enough and experience the sacredness of this fellowship. Because what happens to people like us, what has happened to someone like me, is we get reborn and resurrected in the sacred rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. We get reborn. I can't go back into Mama's womb, but we get reborn in spirit, reawakened, and we get to live in the sunlight of the Spirit. My life today consists of living in all three sides of the triangle. My life consists of three times a day prayer, meditation. My life consists of being accountable to a sponsor and working with strict spiritual disciplines of steps 10 and 11 to grow in understanding and effectiveness, continually reworking the steps to experience the depth of self with successful living. Fidelity to my God, fidelity in my relationship, and not using prayer or AA as one of the other 10,000 things I need to do today. It is the only thing I need to do today, is to seek my God and worship my God and shout my God from the rooftops, even in Alcoholics Anonymous. What we ought to be in AA is a pep rally for the power of God and the great things that this loving God does for someone like me and someone like us through 12 spiritual disciplines laid out in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. This God could have gave this message to many great minds, to many great doctors, and he selected a drunk to go work with the drunk, and thank the good Lord for the last 79 years, we pretty much still work one drunk next to another. And little by slowly have them lose what they think they are, grind the ego into dust, and what emerges is what God gave at the beginning, what the Oxford Group talks about, living with purity, honesty, unselfishness, and love. This process of recovery, I found out, unlike what I thought when I came in, where I thought I had to get stuff and acquire things and make money and be a success, is the process of removal. I'm less now than when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, yet less in the sense of self, yet more awakened and more full, and I experience abundance from God. June 23rd, 1988, it was not like that. I would have signed up for one more day of not drinking. And maybe remove the pain and consequences. And what God did for me was set me on a path. And many of us are set on a path. The path has already been laid out for us. And what has happened to someone like me is I accumulate stuff over the years before I get into Alcoholics Anonymous. I accumulate belief systems. I accumulate fears. I accumulate resentments. I accumulate prejudices. And this is what I'm stuck with. When I land here and removing the drink, that stuff is still there. Page 51 talks about years of living. When we leave the drink question aside, they tell why living was so unsatisfactory, because I'm laying on page 52 expecting to experience God and freedom, and that's not just going to happen. I've been locked up plenty of times and didn't drink. I wasn't sponsorship material when the judge said go home. Right? The path I had to walk, the path many of us get to walk in Alcoholics Anonymous, because it's a get to. We get to do the steps. I get to have a sponsor. I get to go to meetings. I get to. The path I get to walk is a path I never saw before. To experience a God I never knew before. And to go to a place I've never experienced before. And the only way I move forward is by the light that burns in my heart to know my Creator. Because secretly, deep down in every one of us, even when we're blind drunk, we're looking for something to make us right. Looking for that connection, looking for that thing that makes me okay, and I keep drinking. And once I pick up a drink, I experience the phenomenon called craving. I can't stop. And my mind takes me back to that which is killing me. I land in Alcoholics Anonymous with a bunch of drunks, and they say we have a way out. Not just dealing with this. If anyone's dealing with their alcoholism, you're missing the whole thing. This is about getting free. Alcoholics Anonymous will not give you relief. What it will promise you is freedom and getting recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. That's the great news I want to share. Let me bear witness for some of those new folks. It's not okay to be thinking about a drink because you're an alcoholic, only if you're untreated. But if you're in the sunlight of the Spirit, you don't think about drinking, only when we do something like this or we're doing a 12-step call. This is the great news. This is what our big book talks about. This is what our lineage talks about. Right back to Dr. Bob and Bill W. Huh? Getting free from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, why to be an effective agent for this power called God. And this is what AA is really all about. I hear some speakers, they turn AA into, and the steps into, I need an engineering degree by the time the meeting's over. It's about driving people back to God, bringing them home. What we do in AA, when I've been able to do what was done for me, is I was the lost sheep, they brought me back to the flock. We go get God's kids and bring them home. The process of recovery is about coming home to the death of self. My first drink, I knew nothing about that. I was 14 years old. I grew up in Brooklyn. You had to hang out on a corner. It was a religion. You hung out on a corner. You had to belong to a crew, the gang that couldn't shoot straight, right? But there we were. And my friends were drinking beer then. I called 45 beer. They seemed to be joyous, happy, and free. They were mindful and present. Is this on? Okay. Ooh. I wanted what they had. I liked the idea that they were roughhousing and talking to the girls and having a good time, so I drank. I had no idea I stepped onto a road paved right to hell called alcoholism. Who knew of alcoholism? All I knew is it took me away from what I was experiencing. Alcohol worked on my alcoholism. That's what Marion was talking about. I pour alcohol on my alcoholism because nothing else seems to work. Driven by 100 forms of fear, fear-based insecure, an ego the size of this room, self-centered, selfish, self-absorbed, it's all about me. I mean, I'm the type of alcoholic that does this. Let's not talk about me. Let's talk about you. What do you think of me? I mean, this is how I operate, right? Right? I loved the effect produced by alcohol. And my first night getting drunk, it was wonderful. I talked to the girls. I roughed house with the guys. By the end of the night, I was Al Pacino. It was a beautiful thing. Fast forward a few years, I'm going into my 7th treatment center by way of being homeless downtown Manhattan, living in abandoned hallways on the Lower East Side, lost complete contact with my family. But why would I turn back to God when I had so much contempt for God? Because God took my mom in the way of a suicide when I was 14. She was one of us. God put me in the back of a filthy hallway, addicted to some other things, an alcoholic. Where's God? I want to know part of God. I'm so grateful my God, our God, if you will, is not a human power. Because based on how I scoffed at God, how I cursed about God, how I ridicule God, if God was a human power, you'd have somebody else doing this talk tonight, and probably many of us not in this room. My God is one all forgiveness and all love. And not a fair God. If my God was a fair God, he would have looked up my report card. I wouldn't be allowed in this place. But all love and all forgiving. Hating God, despising God, June 23rd, 1988, I beg from the bottom of my heart, please take me from this. I can't do it anymore. I was given the gift of desperation, and it really is a gift, and that's when the truth found me. You know what happens when we're in those moments, drunk or sober? Because we can get them in Alcoholics Anonymous. How many of us in this room, our ego has gotten so big and we're not doing so good and we can't tell another drunk, I'm not doing so good. I'm living all over page 52. I got food sprees and money sprees and sex sprees and fear sprees and I'm always thinking. I always have drama. But I won't tell anyone about it. Because my alcoholism has gone underground and resurfaced in another area. I need help. I need to be pulled out. And we'll bottom out. And the truth will find us. And that's the moment where we go, I can't do it anymore. I don't care how foolish I look, I'm going to stand up and say, somebody help me. And that's the first step into freedom. For me, it happened June 23rd, 1988. When I begged this God to take me from this, the same God I cursed, and he placed me in my 7th treatment center. That day, I'll remember forever. Because I was completely out of my mind on June 23rd, 1988. And I don't say that figuratively. I mean that literally. I was completely out of my mind. And I pray to my God, my loving God, that I keep out of my mind till the day he calls me home. In fact, I pray everyone in this room, you lose your mind and it never returns. Because if you think about where all our problems are manufactured, it's up in this mind. The self-reliance is a form of dishonesty. God could and would if he was sought. We turn all things into the Father of light presides over us all, but I got this one. That's being a liar. June 23rd, 1988, says, please take me from this. And what I had given to me by this God was enough, and I have other work for you to do. And I said, I'm hearing voices. And I was. And if anyone's new and denies your God experience, just go on to someone else. Because God will speak to any one of us. And he won't shoot the wounded the way we shouldn't shoot the wounded. God is God who'll cut right through everything. How do you think many of us are in here? In a blind drunk, something goes off and says, I need to get help. This gentleman, our first speaker, spoke about it. In a blind drunk, he realized, I need some help. June 23rd, 1988, my God said, enough, I have other work for you to do. It was only being in AA about 8 years, where I realized what those words meant, that the path was already laid out for me, and the work I have to do is his work, be an effective agent for this power, and nothing less than that great fact. And when I'm living along the line of God's will, it seems like I'm able to wear the world like a loose garment. When I'm living along the lines of my will, I get tight. I assign people roles. They need to feel a certain way, think a certain way, speak a certain way. Everything had to be removed. The death of self is successful living. On my way into my 7th treatment center, I made a call. I was trying to make a collect call to my dad. Because the only guy on the planet who would come get me in my condition would be my dad, who I lost contact with. God separated all of us. And I was just roaming the streets, about 50, 60 pounds less than I weigh now. Hadn't eaten, hadn't bathed. I look like the bum on the street, and I'm 28. If I live to be 100, I'll never be as old as the day I walked into AA. So I make a couple of collect calls, and I hang up the phone, and I never reach my dad. He treks back from Atlantic City into Lower Manhattan and Brooklyn trying to find me. He had this intuitive thought that his oldest son was in serious trouble. Let me go find him. And God connected the dots, and my dad found me. And my dad got out of the car and walked across the street. He called my name, and I says, "Dad, I'm okay. Everything's good." And then I collapsed. And I collapsed in my dad's arms. And I haven't shared this story in a long time. But as I collapsed in his arms and I was kind of in and out and I was really woozy, I remember him patting me on the back and saying this many times, that he wasn't going to lose his son to this. He repeated that all like a mantra over and over and over again. And what God did for both of us that particular day was place our roots in new soil. Because we never gelled. It took destruction of his belief systems. It took the destruction of my belief systems, where everything got removed like God will do, to bring us together. And off I went to my seventh and last treatment center. And I say last not to be conceited or pretentious or boastful, but as long as I walk with my God, I've seen my last treatment center. And as long as I walk with my God, I will stay recovered. The process of recovery is a forward journey backwards. And as long as I keep doing that, I will be awake. I will be present rather than walking through this life sound asleep thinking I'm awake. It's a forward journey backwards. Numerically, I go through the steps with my sponsor once a year. 1 into 3 into 5 and so on. But as I move through the steps and I start to experience less self and more God, I start to go home. I go back home and I get more of the experience of being pure, honest, unselfish, and loving. It's the process of recovery, the forward journey backwards. I get out of my 7th treatment center and they sent me, I was about 6 weeks in Long Island, New York. And that was my 5th treatment, about 10 days in my 7th treatment center. And they says, "You're going to go to Minnesota." I said, "Well, let's not get crazy now. This is..." And he said, "No, you need to go away a long time." And I went off to Minnesota for 6 more weeks of treatment. And they sent me to something called a halfway house, and something called a three-quarter house, and something called a sober house. And by then, I was going to meetings, and I went to a meeting called the Three Legacies meeting in Minnesota. And at Three Legacies meeting, in fact, their founder just passed away, Chuck R. I went in there, and it was a meeting about this big. And I would stay in the back because I didn't look too good. I had my brother's pants on, my brother's jacket on, my brother's shirt on, and an old pair of sneakers. And that's all I owned. When I got sober in 1988, I had nothing. I didn't need a cell phone to get well. I didn't need a girlfriend to get well. I didn't need a job to get well, and I didn't need money to get well, and when I didn't have money to put in a basket, the old-timers said, "Don't worry about it. As long as you're here, that's more important than putting some money in the basket. We want you to get well." And I would stand in the back of the room, and I watched speakers get to the podium, just like I am tonight, and talked about living in all three sides of the triangle, and talked about where they were currently living in 10, 11, and 12, where intuitive thinking will come from. And I wanted what they had to offer, but like Marion, I was petrified being in here. How do you go up to a speaker and say, "Thank you for sharing," because they're going to size me up as soon as I walk forward? They never did. These people in AA, I remember I was living in a town called Hastings, Minnesota. This meeting was about an hour drive, and they would come get me, take me to the meeting, take me to a diner, feed me, and then drive me back. And never once did they make me feel shameful about who I was, because I was loaded with that. I had self-loathing. And I started work through the book. About 6 months into recovery, I got thirsty again. It was almost 6 months to the day, December 22nd, 1988. I wanted to drink, and I said, "I'm in trouble again." And I made a prayer to this God, "If you're out there, I'm in trouble again." And I drove to this gentleman's house in a town called Cottage Grove. And I got there, and I knocked on his door, and he let me in. And you know how newcomers are. We say hello, and they talk for the next 3 hours. He said, "Hi, Pete," and I didn't shut up. And when I finally paused, he says, "Where are you with God in the 12 steps?" I said, "When do you start the steps?" He said, "When you stop throwing up, you're late." What I wanted was to go to the diner and have a lot of coffee. I wanted a hug. Read page 449 of Acceptance. Let's talk about your feelings and your issues. He didn't do any of that. He wasn't in the feelings business. He wasn't in the dysfunctional family business. He was in a life-saving business, and I'm bleeding to death in front of him. And what I found out in AA, while we're making meetings, we can die of 1,000 cuts. We can bleed out while we're making meetings if we're left untreated. If I'm trying to go about this alone, without a loving God, without experiencing oneness with God, no more duality with God, but oneness, knowing that we're known by our Creator, what a gift. But it had to, I had to come from teachers who weren't worried about ruffling my feathers. And so I heard them. A few minutes later, I was brought home, and I was brought to a group called the Free Spirit Group in Brooklyn. And my first appointed teacher showed up, and he was like the guys in Minnesota. A pure message from the big book Alcoholics Anonymous. They didn't give me opinions. They gave me facts. They shared their experience, strength, and hope with me. That carried a message of depth and weight. And so I locked onto a sponsor, and we began walking through this book. And I remember coming to one day, realizing I hadn't thought about drinking, and I don't know how long. How did this happen? Eventually, I got a job back, and I realized I was bathing twice a day. I had money on payday. I was eating. I was sober. I had a sponsor. People were asking me to speak, and I finally had my first sponsee. The spiritual life makes absolutely no sense. Based on many of our track records, we're not supposed to be sitting here suited up for an AA meeting. My relationship with God, my personal relationships with other people, what I do for a living, I would do for free. None of it makes sense. It doesn't make sense to a thinking mind, but in God's world, it makes perfect sense. I get to experience abundance with God. I get to experience freedom with God. My God is out to seek and to save, the same way we do when we go look for a drunk. Go look for a drunk and bring him in here. Seeking and saving. I surrender to my God every morning. I surrender to my God in the afternoon, my middle of the day prayer, and I surrender to God once again at night. And he makes me an effective agent to go seek and to save another drunk. Some of our contemporary AA meetings, will ruffle their feathers, but we get great power in AA. We're no longer powerless. 10-step promise talks about that. We get great power, and in that power, God gives us the ability to heal others. Go do a 12-step call. I've done a million of them. Go into the drunk's house. The house looks drunk. The wife is scared to death. The drunk is a train wreck. The kids are afraid. Then we bring them in here, and little by slowly, we work with the drunk, getting them through the steps. They have some sort of transformation. That same drunk who infected the family is moved to go bring this message back. Give back in the form of amends. Give the living amends. Be with them. Be with the children. Be with the wife. Whether they go to Al-Anon or not. And then you visit that family in 6 months, 9 months, a year. The whole family's changed. It's an AA house. It's a recovered house. It's a God house. We got one of the lost sheep and brought them home. We seek and we save people in Alcoholics Anonymous. We get to heal in the sacred rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I try to bring that back. My sponsors, all my teachers have turned me on to the power of meditation and the power of prayer in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you don't want to be popular in AA, throw out a topic like living in the world of the spirit. They won't invite you back, right? Let's talk about 11-step nightly review. Oh, he's going to be one of those guys now, right? Let's talk about living joyous, happy, and free in Alcoholics Anonymous rather than talking about drama. Because we love drama. I used to love drama. You got drama? You got drama? You got any? Look like he was looking for dope. You got anybody got drama? Anybody got drama? And if you don't have drama, let's get together. We'll invent some drama. Just get something going on. Trying to be mindful and present and awake. Right? How many folks drove to this meeting, whoever drove, alone? Anyone drive here alone tonight? Right? One guy. Two guys. Oh, wait, we're in a city. Oh, excuse me, we're in a city. How many folks are on the train alone tonight? Anybody? All right, the whole room goes. Okay. If you were riding the train alone, I know there's other people. You're in there alone, you're going up to the Atlantic Group, right? How many people were you talking to in your head on the way up here? Got them. Right? We were walking down the city today, one of the city blocks, and it was this poor, unfortunate guy who was having a conversation with about 300 people, screaming, hollering, crying. And I said to Marion, that's what we do in AA, except we keep it under our breath. We're talking to everybody all the time. We're arguing, we're fighting, we're giving tear-jerking talks, right? We're just incredible, right? The guy who gives a talk has a talk on the way to the podium, and on the way home, all the things he left out he should have said. I mean, this goes on and on and on. And then we walk into an AA meeting and say, Joey, how you doing? I'm wonderful. I'm spiritual. What a way to live. All kidding aside. That's bondage to self. We're slaves to our mind. Which makes a wonderful servant, but a terrible master. Right. And very often we talk about living joyous, happy, and free, but anything the mind says we're attached to, we get hooked right in, we ride it, never getting free. I bottomed out in Alcoholics Anonymous with that. I hit a wall in Alcoholics Anonymous. 10, 12 years sober, I'm working with all spiritual disciplines, but I'm starting to listen to some dialogue. It wasn't drinking dialogue, it was just getting restless here and discontented. And I was afraid to tell someone because I thought still, after all these years of sobriety, that you guys just might say you can't come back here anymore. And God sends the angels in just when we need them. And my last sponsor, Mark H., was in town for a fellowship of the Spirit. I knew I had to talk to this man. And he says, I was waiting for you. I said, I hit this, I don't know what it is. He said, a wall. I said, exactly. I don't know how to go under it, around it, or what to do. He said, you need to rework the steps. I asked him to sponsor me. My life lit up. It's never been the same. And so I try to pass that on to other people about reworking the steps. I love the effect produced by booze. Give me more booze. I like Jack Daniels. I like Mr. Boston Blackberry Brandy. Just give me more. IV me booze. When I go down and come up, give me more drink. And I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, what many of us do. That's enough, God. I got to drive tonight. It makes no sense. I love the effect produced by God. And so I go back into the work. Whether I feel like I need it or not, it's just something I do. Because I've been made clear what my purpose is. It's to be an agent for this power, which is what our big book talks about. He's the principal, I'm his agent. We have the ability to represent God. That's what our book says. Go out and represent me. How am I doing? I just want to share a quick story with you, how God reads the soul. He hears it when it hurts. We all have the thing that hurts, the thing that we swallow hard on. The thing that when we talk about, we get choked up. I don't care how long we're sober. And even if it's resolved and been processed, it's still that thing. God hears it and will heal us from it. And sometimes it's just our daily affairs, going from point A to point B. A few weeks ago, I'm headed out to Sweden to give a talk like this. And I fly from Fort Lauderdale to wonderful, warm and friendly Newark Airport. And it's hostile. And I'm waiting at the international gate. And I can't find a gate. No one's helping me out. I'm leaving the country. And my mind's not saying, why are you leaving the country for? You don't need to do this. Florida has you very busy. You don't know where you're going. Your last time you were there was like 5 years ago. Go home. Don't do this. Go home. Don't do this. And Mary and I were both feeling uncomfortable. And we said, let's pray. So right in the terminal, we held hands and worked with something from Scripture, and we prayed. We opened up our eyes, because I'm not afraid to pray in front of anyone. I got drunk in front of everybody. I can pray in front of everybody. There was a woman standing there and said to us, it's so nice to see people praying in public. And we start talking, and she said most of her family's in AA. Some are in Al-Anon. She was a missionary going back to see her dad. Her and her husband were missionaries, and she had the same faith that we did. And she says, you know, my favorite scripture is this. With her and I, Mary and I, we just finished praying. And she says, you know, I have something home, and something told me to bring it on this trip, and I don't know why. And it was a bangle with that same scripture, which she gave to Marion. And we talked some more, and suddenly I got God-centered again. I got unhooked from the mind. God sent an angel in. And I'm saying, okay, I'm ready to go on this plane and go deliver God's message in the form of AA. I'm ready to go. And we got on a plane. We had a great flight. She said, let's talk when we're up in the air. We'll get together and we'll talk. We said, great. We went looking for her. She wasn't on the plane. We saw her get on the plane. She wasn't on the plane. We waited for the plane to deplane. This woman disappeared. So maybe we just missed her. But I've been around AA a long time. And I've heard miracles of miracle stories. And I know the great works this guy God does. He sent us an angel that day to give us ease and comfort, just a brief moment of it, to get us right-sized and go carry his message in Stockholm, Sweden. And the trip was unforgettable. And it started with just a visit from an angel sent by God. What we are in AA is just that. We go get the drunk, we bring him in here, we show up, we make the phone call, we clean up the drunk, we do those things that most people won't even touch us when we're in our cups, and we go do it. God gave us that kind of courage to go do it, and then we watch them make a year, we watch them make 5 years, we watch them sponsoring the sacred rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Huh? That's the great news we get to talk about here. That's all I got. Peace.